This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello, everyone. Just before we start, we mentioned diversification a lot in this show, so we just need to make you aware that diversification cannot ensure profits or protect against the loss of principal. Anyway, on with the show.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America, as we kick off a brand new year, 2022, with a new set of operating instructions, perhaps, for the financial markets around the world. Joining me now to talk about that is Adam Farstrup. He is Head of Multi-Asset Americas for Schroders. And Adam, as Happy New Year, and as we kick off this
Happy New Year, Ron.
Thank you. We're already seeing that things have, to a certain extent, changed. We have tighter central bank policy in many places around the globe. We're dealing with the Omicron variant, which is a holdover from prior years. But markets are also behaving a little erratically to start 2022. As we're teeing things up for this year, just give us a big picture of what you see.
Sure. Thanks. In some sense, the volatility that we're seeing in markets isn't particularly surprising to us. If we go back to previous conversations that you and I have had, certainly conversations that Johanna Kirkland and Keith Wade had on this podcast before the end of the year, you know, we talked about the fact that as central banks begin this process of normalizing policy, right, taking liquidity away from the market, inevitably you are going to see dislocations and volatility break out. And that's even before, of course, we had Omicron. So we think, where are we in the cycle? We see the economic cycle, firmly moving from the recovery stage to the expansion stage. And when that happens, typically equities continue to do well in that expansion phase, but not as well as they did in the recovery phase. And so that gives more room for the volatility. And you combine that with the fact that really central banks are having to tighten policy much earlier in that expansion than you would typically see. So I kind of think about, where we've been in the cycle as, the central banks put a lot of nitrous in the fuel tank, got us moving very quickly during the pandemic. And now the question is, do we run out of road before we win the race, right?
Let me ask you about that. I mean, and it's interesting. My premise that I'm operating off of this year is that the Fed's going to be too aggressive. And it may not make as much of a difference to Main Street, as you say, because we're in the expansion phase, but it may have a bigger impact on Wall Street. Is that potentially the way to frame it?
I think it's a risk, right? So if we think about sort of the stagflationary risks facing the economy, so we do see inflation falling back, but you can't eliminate the risk that we end up in a stagflationary situation. The Fed has clearly gotten religion about the inflation issue. It's clearly deeper than they expected 9 months ago or even 6 months ago. And so we have to think about the risk that perhaps they tighten too quickly. Again, the last time you and I talked, I used the analogy of the tightrope over a pit of lava. I think they're still on the tightrope, but they can still get knocked off. So, 2 months ago, everybody was concerned that they'd really gotten behind the inflation curve and that was going to be a big concern, at least over the next 18 months. They seem to have sort of gotten back onto that curve. And the question is, can they stay on that curve or do they accelerate too quickly?
So, Adam, we got the minutes from the last Fed meeting, and it seemed that the Fed is willing. And in fact, as you said, not only going to tighten earlier in the cycle, but they outlined in this instance a case where there's going to be not just the end of quantitative easing or bond buying, not just interest rate increases, but also the near simultaneous reduction of their balance sheet, which is something they didn't do in the prior recovery cycle. Is that just too much for even a strong economy to handle?
There's certainly the risk of it, and we saw the markets react to that yesterday. I think the speed of the move in the rates market is going to be one of the crucial factors of how the cycle and the markets play out this year, right? Too slow, and the inflation fears are dominant, and the market worries deeply about that, right? too fast and is really going to hit the equity markets and risk knocking the cycle over, right? So, you know, this would not be the first time that sort of an overly aggressive tightening by central banks, you know, actually brings an early end to the cycle. And added to that Fed risk, you have to remember that there's the market is assuming that the ECB is going to stay loose as well. But if we look at what's happening in Europe right now, there's the possibility that the ECB surprises everybody in the hawkish side as well. So I think, you know, we're very alert to that risk. At the same time, the fact that the Fed recognizes that they have multiple levers that they need to pull right now, if they're successful in being data driven, they have the possibility of, you know, draining liquidity from the system without raising, you know, the costs of debt too greatly. And of course, what does that mean for us as we look at the volatility in the markets? You know, we've already seen the speculative corners of the market taking a hit. This is what you would expect when liquidity is being drained. And so the faster that the market thinks that that liquidity is going to be drained, the faster you're going to see it hit more of the speculative tech side of the market. You know, everybody looks at the ARK Innovation ETF as a good signal for that. You know, we can see that it's at its 52-week lows. So, you know, we're definitely cautious about parts of the market that are more exposed to those sort of speculative valuations that will take the first hit with those interest rate rise expectations.
Now, it's been a while since the Federal Reserve has embarked upon a, let's say, tightening cycle or normalization of interest rate policy. Can we use the last experience as a template for this one?
You always look to history to see what might happen. But I think there's so many unusual circumstances that we face here that it's really tough to just take that sort of historical narrative as your template going forward. So, you know, certainly what that translates into for us is thinking that diversification is going to be very important this year, right? You know, we always talk about diversification as multi-asset investors. We think it becomes even more crucial in a year like 2022, where there is so much uncertainty, so many risks that are facing us. It's hard to build conviction in the way that you could say in an early cycle recovery. In an early cycle recovery, it's really easy to go back to the playbook and think, okay, now's the time to add risk into my portfolios. I can add cyclical risk, and I know that ultimately I'm going to get compensated for it. Now, with these different risks facing us, we think you have to, you know, balance your risks in portfolio between the amount of equities that you have, the amount of bonds that you have. How do you think about diversifying against some of these inflation risks that we talked about? So whether that's commodities, or even moving into the world of carbon credits is an area that we're exploring as we sort of think about how should you think about inflation pressures on the economy? There's no doubt that a climate transition has inflationary pressures, and carbon credits could be a useful complement to the traditional commodities approach in that space. International assets, we think, are going to be very important this year because, again, we don't know that it's going to be a single speed cycle around the world. And so spreading your bets around the world is going to be important. And bringing credit back into the picture. I mean, I think it's interesting that a lot of people are sort of looking at spreads in the credit market and thinking, well, this is priced for perfection. And there is some truth to that. But because the underlying economic cycle, even with the Fed tightening, is so strong, what you see is that the corporate balance sheets, by and large, are very, very healthy.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Let me follow up on that. We had on CNBC just the other day, one of the principals from Marathon, which is a huge credit hedge fund in the United States. And he was saying similar things that you know, credit opportunities in high yield and other kind of more speculative areas of the credit sector are going to see buying opportunities because of this move by the Fed. Isn't it a bit premature since those sectors tend to blow out pretty hard when the Fed first starts tightening?
I think the issue is, or the way to think about it, I should say, is really because the Fed is tightening early in the cycle, in a lot of these credits, you've had less of that speculative excess built up. So what you have is typically when the Fed is tightening, it's late in the cycle. There's a lot more leverage built into these balance sheets. The people are willing to take more risk with how they interact in those credit markets. And so that creates that opportunity for the spreads to blow out. Until the cycle, the underlying economic cycle meaningfully turns, we actually think that when we look at the fundamentals of credit, yes, it's expensive, but the fundamentals of the earnings of these companies, of their balance sheet quality, by and large, supports their ability to repay those debts. And so what does it mean when you're buying credit right now? You're really buying for the carry opportunities rather than for the spread opportunities.
Let me go back to a couple other areas that you mentioned. First, commodities, which are not behaving at the moment in uniform fashion as an asset class. Some doing very well again. You know, lumber has rallied back rather sharply. Oil is approaching $80 a barrel. And then some commodities like precious metals and copper have rolled over. And in fact, gold and silver last year had the worst year in quite some time. So can you be monolithic, if you will, about a view on commodities, or do you have to be a little bit more selective as an asset class when you look at those?
We've really tried to lean into kind of more of the kind of energy and cyclical commodities because of the inflation risks. That's what we're trying to pick up right now. And so I think, you know, where people might have traditionally thought of gold as potentially an inflation hedge, we don't see that in this environment, particularly with the Fed tightening. So as central banks tighten, you know, real yields are going to come in. And when real yields come in, it's not a good environment for gold or for silver, any of the precious metals. So we like the energy side more than anything else. The industrial metals can be very hard to forecast given, you know, the way that you see markets like China sometimes hoarding and getting really technical around that space. But I think a broad exposure to more cyclical commodities is going to be beneficial given the stagflationary risks that we face. And again, I go back to the energy transition, which is so important, is going to, in the short term, put a floor under energy prices because this transition is going to take time and it's going to put pressures across the system as we make that transition.
And you also mentioned international markets. And you know, in dollar terms last year, it wasn't necessarily the best place to be since the dollar appreciated about 7%, cutting into those returns when you bring them back home. And with the Fed tightening and the Fed being the de facto central banker to the world, can you really go out into EM and make the assumptions that you'll get some vig there, if you will, if the Federal Reserve is not friendly in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting space to think about. I mean, the first thing I would say is on the currency side, I think it's important to think about what currency exposures you're taking and to remember that, you know, especially in developed markets, you can hedge a lot of that currency risk and actually pick up some interesting opportunities right now because there is a risk that the dollar continues to be relatively strong, although we don't think it's going to run away from here. When it comes to emerging markets, it gets ever more tempting. You know, emerging markets are clearly one of the parts of the market that are cheaper right now. And that's true whether you look at the debt side or the equity side of things. What's interesting is this is one of the first times that we've actually seen the emerging market central banks tightening ahead of the Fed. And so that's created some very interesting sort of dislocations and opportunities. The risk side of getting into emerging markets too early is, I think none of us really know how China's going to play out over the next 6 to 9 months. There's a lot of things going on there that are very hard to sort of peel the onion back on. And so we're really relying on our active stock pickers to help guide us as to how we should be thinking about that market, because it's very hard to think about from a macro standpoint. You know, if you go too far into broad emerging markets, you're taking a bet that sort of China will manage the property market and the sort of debt excesses that you see there well. And they appear to be doing it so far, but there's still risks there that are hard to price. And so we continue to sort of head back into emerging markets very cautiously. It's in it's in the universe that we think about. We see opportunities there, but you want to be careful at the pace in which you add back.
I've been struggling mightily over the past couple of days to prepare my speeches for 2022 and trying to find some grand unifying field theory for the year. It seems much harder to make a statement about this year than any prior year that I've experienced, at least in the recent past. Do you find the same trouble?
I do. I was hoping you were going to tell me you found a grand theory.
No.
But I think that goes back to the point that I made about this is going to be a year where diversification certainly matters at the beginning of this period. You know, the year may develop differently as we go along, and we'll find opportunities to focus some of our conviction on. I think, again, you want to stay exposed to risk in the market, because the baseline expectation is that while economic growth has peaked, it will continue, that the central banks aren't going to kill the cycle yet. And so there's an opportunity to continue to make returns from here. But it's very hard to find that narrative, as you say. So thinking about how you've spread those bets, yes, you know, having a highly diversified portfolio won't deliver the highest return, but it's going to let you sleep at night at a time when I think it could be pretty hard to sleep at night.
Is that so? Would that be the unifying theory for this year, that it's just going to be a little harder to sleep in 2022 than it was in prior years?
Yeah, I think it's going to be harder to sleep at night, although that doesn't mean that there aren't great things happening. It just means that there are more things that can, you know, pop up and come and impact the markets. And that's without even getting into the geopolitical side of things. And we know that there's a long list of concerns on the geopolitical side of the equation, which we have no greater insight than anybody else, but we have to pay attention. And again, we think that diversification is going to help us there.
Yeah, that's the one thing. When I was going down my list of worries and what could blindside us, you know, after we know what the Fed and other central banks are doing, it seems like both political risk, whether it's in the United States or in China and a number of other places like Turkey and what have you, and then geopolitical risk when it comes to the U.S. squaring off against both Russia and China, potentially with its allies, that those areas really need a deep dive for those who maybe haven't paid as much attention there as in prior periods.
Yeah, I think you have to pay attention to that space, because you need to have it's hard to predict some of these events before they happen, but you need to have a theory of how things might work out so that when the volatility occurs, you can sort of stay calm in the storm and think about what are your moves from there. And that's, again, diversification gives you a good starting point for that lets you see some of these opportunities as dislocations occur, take advantage of them. We think you're going to have to be very nimble over the course of 2022. You know, you go back to what you said earlier in this podcast about sort of that volatility at the very beginning. We think that is going to continue. You know, we haven't even talked about really COVID or Omicron, but I think that's another good example of what's happening here. You know, Omicron created a huge sense of worry and fear when we first learned about it in late November and December. It's created disruptions. You've seen certain sectors like the travel sector really get dislocated and then bounce back because people realize that actually this hasn't been as disruptive, or doesn't appear like it will be as disruptive for as long a period of time as at the beginning of the pandemic. And so, you know, I think about COVID specifically, it's still a major issue for the world, but in terms of the markets, you know, the bumps are getting smaller and smaller for us as we move through the pandemic into the endemic stages of things.
All right, we'll leave it on that hopeful note. Adam, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year. Adam Farshad, head of Multi-Asset Americas for Schroders. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for joining us for this first U.S. Lens of 2022. We'll talk to you again in just a couple of weeks.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.